This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 371, brought to you by Mandroid, Chris Hardwick's new comedy special, available on CD and DVD from Comedy Central, and iFanboy listeners just like you.
But it takes more than one person, so everyone jump on. I'll miss you when you're just like them.
Imitate their water.
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 371. I am the Woody Boy to Ron Richards, Ernie Pantuso, Paul Montgomery.
Wow, a coach joke.
That's perfect.
I'm the John Lovitz to his Phil Hartman. There are also other those aren't good examples. There are also other
They're
people on the
dead.
Show.
Oh my God, like, Ron's dead.
There's Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi, Paul.
And Josh Merriweather Flanagan.
Hello. I don't get it. What's that mean?
It's just a middle name.
Oh. How did you know?
At iFanboy.com, we like comics and we read comics. And every week we read a bunch of comics. And then one of us picks the best book and writes about it on the website. And then we talk about it here on the show, along with other things. And before we get to it, a quick reminder, warning, this is a review show. And we will be talking about the things that happen in this week's books. So if you're worried about spoilers, remember that there are worse things that could happen, like finding snakes in your glove compartment.
That is pretty bad.
So this week, Josh had the pick.
I did. Do you guys mind if I do this whole review in the voice of Boss Nass?
Yes, I actually.
Okay. So I will not call him the Punisher.
No.
Thank you. Sorry, I just had to get that out. Pick of the week this week was Punisher War Zone, which I desperately want to call and type Punisher War Journal. I can't even help it. That's a decades-long muscle memory. This is the five-issue miniseries. This is the fourth issue that is actually just a continuation of the Punisher series that Greg Rucka had been doing for some reason. Does anyone know why they broke it off into a different series? It seemed odd.
I think it's a number of reasons. One, it allows them to start again at a new number one.
Yeah.
And two, it's a story focused solely on him fighting the Avengers. So people are more likely to pick this up.
Yeah, I guess.
If it's if they can bill it as a miniseries of Punisher versus the Avengers, people will pick that up.
I know. I'm shocked that there's no Avengers in this title because it would seem to fit perfectly, which was one of the sort of things I wrote. But also, I think this hit at the same time that Marvel Now did. So, yeah, deal. Yeah. It's all new. But then it really wasn't new. That was the thing. Basically, my point of view on this is that I really like Greg Rucka a lot. He's one of, if not my favorite writer in comics. Doesn't mean I've loved everything he's ever done. So he started this Punisher book, and I don't really like the Punisher that much. I don't have anything against the Punisher. It's just never been a thing that I've been all that into. And I actually dropped off the last series, but I came back on after a bit. And it was the cool thing about that was that it was still like I didn't have a problem. Like it was good. I was able to get it because Punisher, relatively straightforward. But also I think Greg Rucka writes in such a way that it's not overly complicated plotting going on. I guess in the background you can kind of tell what's going on with these character arcs.
Well, it was basically one story. It wasn't like you came out as a new arc and you're confused. You know, the story from the beginning was the story he's still telling it in this book, basically.
And that's a big story.
Yeah,
and I really like that. And so when we moved over to this new miniseries, we got a new artist, and I have to go back to the beginning and look at the name because it's a hell of a name, and the application crashed.
Carmine DiGiandomenici.
Oh, that's a is that right?
Yeah.
And as a replacing Marco Cicchetto, who I thought made an extensive, really got a lot better over the course of that last series. And basically what this is the Avengers versus Punisher. And every issue's had kind of a different feel to it. The last issue was basically Thor and Punisher sit down and have a beer. Mm-hmm. And Thor's like, let me level with you as a warrior. And so they sit down and they chat. And basically he's trying to be like, you know, chill out, Frank. It's going to be fine. But the Punisher is an inexorable force. So the fourth issue here finds us that Punisher's got to break his friend out of jail who he's responsible for having put there. And the Avengers have to stop him. The Avengers, the fun part of this for me is that the Avengers are all at odds with each other, basically. You know, Wolverine is like, Frank's doing a good thing. And then, so the Cap is angry with him. And then Spider-Man thinks he's a complete, you know, horrible villain because he's been screwing around and killing people in New York City where he's trying to help people for years. You know, Cap says, well, he's a Marine. He's a soldier. And everybody has a different take on him. And it's very specific. I really like that. Like Rucka went in and he knew sort of what every character thought about Punisher. And that is a really interesting sort of thing that happens. And then at the same time, I think he has a very clear view on what the Punisher is, and that makes this work very well for me because, you know, there's all sorts of ways that you can look at the Punisher. You can look at him as, you know, some people say, oh, he's just Batman with guns. You know, Rucka looks at him as, you know, he's an unstoppable mass murderer, basically. I mean, he's
with special forces training.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and a little something extra on top, whatever that, you know, Batman factor is, I guess, to his sort of no one can take him down because he's so determined. And really, what is the difference between him and a murderer, you know, like a psychopathic murderer? Is it just that he only kills bad guys? You know, it's still illegal what he does, and it still can be considered very bad to sort of kill people on the rate that he does. And this is really the issue that it all comes together, you know, it culminates in the sort of big fight that's about to happen. But I really like the character stuff, as I was talking about with this a lot, but I also like the tactical sense of seeing what Frank does to get around, you know, the Avengers and how he defeats the most powerful super team on Earth. And at the beginning, the question was with the Avengers, like, why are we bothering with this guy? It's just a guy. And you know, he's good enough to take them on. To a certain extent. And I really like there's a bit where they ask Natasha, you know, who's Black Ops, the Black Widow, they ask her, you know, like, well how would you do it? And she sort of says what would happen as he does it, you know, in the background.
Yeah.
We see that going on. That's a really nice device and just really well thought out and planned. It feels, you know, this felt like reading one of Rucka's novels in a way where sort of when you set that little ball going down the mousetrap, you know, and you're going to see all the little devices click off and everything goes into motion here. And of course, this is your spoiler for it. The big turning point, and Connor, you put this in the best of the weekend panels, and I was glad to see it, is that this is really wonderful panel where Stark is in his Stark Tower and he's tippy-tapping away on his computers. And it's the most subtle thing on earth is that he's talking to himself and looking at the monitors, and just in the background you just see the little figure of the Punisher, and you see his silhouette and the skull, and you almost don't register it. Connor, you said you didn't even see it the first time.
Well, I looked at it and it didn't really click with me, but then the next, you know, I went back and looked at it after the reveal, and I thought, oh, is that Punisher on the monitor? Because they are monitoring the Punisher.
I looked up at the other monitors, like, is he in any of the other?
I did that too. I looked at the other panels going, is he in there? And then he's not in there. Oh, that's him. Oh, Tony's in trouble. Like, that was a great little reveal using the art. Gian Domenici It's a very unusual style. It's not a style you'll find in a lot of Marvel books. It's a very European style. He's probably Italian. And I like it a lot.
Gian Domenico.
He does a lot of great action, but also little subtle things like that. Panel, we just talked about that, do a really good job. Now, Paul, I talked about this series a lot, and we've talked about this particular miniseries a lot, but you didn't really read it till recently. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I just, when this became the pick, I went back and looked at this particular miniseries, and I love this art a lot. I love the structure of the issues that, you know, the first one is kind of, it's the Spider-Man encounter with the Punisher, and then Wolverine going to talk to him like man to man. Let's see if we can talk him down first before we, you know, send in guns a-blazing. But then the second issue might be my favorite. That's the Black Widow issue.
Yeah.
And those two together are fantastic, and they have similar training, similar minds. So although coming from a different particular background in, you know, spycraft and things like that, great cartooning in the action sequences. I remember like a really great like somersaulting thing that the Black Widow did, and everything reads very clearly. There are some great action-packed books that came out even this week, but you don't I couldn't say that every panel was completely clear as to what was going on. This one, since I read it on Comixology, I was reading it like panel by panel view, and it was almost like animation. It was perfect in those sequences. So that's really strong.
It really, like, all the way through this series, I've just noticed like it's just such a clear, strong example of comic book storytelling.
Yep.
Like in the larger sense, and it really, like, there's a lot of elements, and it's just so succinctly and well done that like you don't have to work at it or think about it. It just is working, and I just felt that as I was reading through. I was like, what a well done comic book.
And the thing is, even though we talked about in the beginning about how it is basically the next four issues of the last series, it is written in such a way that if you just want to see the Punisher face off against the Avengers, you can totally get these three issues. All you need to know is that the Punisher's partner was convicted for crimes and is now going to death row, and he's breaking her out, and the Avengers are trying to stop him. That's all you really need to know backstory wise. I mean, obviously you can go back and read it all and get a fuller picture of the relationships and why he feels so guilty and all that. But it is a fun story.
You get all the context, and I think going back to just the great storytelling, part of it is just that I think the choice to make the Avengers as a unit, like as small and intimate as it is, it's not, he's not biting off more than he can chew in this miniseries.
Yeah.
You know, like if this is so refreshing to read after Hickman's Avengers the same week, that's so heady, and it's very ambitious, and that's admirable. But this is like he's picked the perfect core group of Avengers. They all have a different point of view. Read, you know, the last month's issue, the Thor and Punisher scene with, you know, the six pack on the hill. Like, can you imagine? Like, you wouldn't think on paper, like Thor and Punisher together, that's a really great scene. It seems like you'd really have to shoehorn it in there. Like those characters are from two completely different worlds, but it's such a great scene. And the characters together relate about war and living in peacetime, or at least, you know, comparative to war. And then this issue, again, like you said, I love the storytelling in this. I love Natasha guessing what he would do, predicting what he would do, and then not retelling that, showing it within her explaining it, you know, showing that he's actually doing just what she's predicting. That's a great economy to that.
What is with Black Widow and not being able to use a chair properly? Because she's perched up in that thing too. And I don't know if you remember.
If you could bend and you could do all the stuff she does, you probably wouldn't sit normally either.
Well, from
I certainly wouldn't walk normally. I would never leave the house normally. I just jump off my balcony every day.
From a sort of posture position, maybe she's realized like, no, you're not supposed to sit in chairs. So I crouch in them. Also, you can escape them more easily.
She does know that it's really bad for you.
Yeah.
In that sense, she probably has no back problems.
None. No.
I have back problems, in case anyone didn't know. This is always on my mind. Now, I used to talk a lot about Peter J. Tomasi. You sit in a chair for 10 hours a day doing a website for 10 years and not have back problems. I used to talk about Peter J. Tomasi a lot previous to the New 52 with his Batman work, or even also with his Justice League work He used to excel at telling really heartwarming superhero stories.
Yes.
That would sort of tug at my heartstrings, but I haven't really connected at all with the Batman and Robin series since the reboot. I still read it, but I don't really get excited about it. But this Batman and Robin annual number one, wasn't even going to get it originally because of my lack of excitement for the series, but then I decided, oh, what the hell, it was sort of a light week, and I picked it up, and this turned out to be one of my favorite issues of a comic in a while.
I heard that from others. Like, it surprised people.
It was a total side story. It wasn't connected to anything going on. You couldn't tell where it would be in the timeline or continuity. That doesn't really matter. It's how the annuals used to be. Just tell a story with the characters. And it's a great heartwarming tale of Damian trying to connect with his dad by sending him on a scavenger hunt around the world, taking him to places that were important to his family, like the place where his mother painted a picture that's still hanging on the wall of a hotel, or a place where she and her father took a photo on their honeymoon. He has them stand where they stood and hold the photo up and see see them sort of come to life in the background. And meanwhile, while that's happening, he takes over Gotham as Batman Jr. He puts on a little Batman suit and runs around and tries to do the voice.
It's great. This was great.
This was wonderful.
This was Home Alone with Damian.
Yeah.
He's tricking his dad by doing these like green screen photos, like, and sending him emails with photos, and he's doing backdrops. Like, it's supposed to be, Damian is supposed to be one step ahead of Bruce in Europe, going to all these places and setting up the scavenger hunt. But he's really back in Gotham, you know, doing the, like, standing up inside of like a trench coat, you know, with a fedora on, like that kind of thing, like pretending to be an adult. And I remember when Tomasi first took over this book, and was it New 52?
Not Batman.
Was it New 52? Okay, well, it was when he first started writing Damian, and I remember that first issue being like, this is not Damian. Like, he does not have the voice down. And now this is the Damian that I love. There's a few different interpretations of Damian, and you'll see that in Batman Incorporated. But this is the Damian I really like. I kind of miss from the old Batgirl series, the Brian Q. Miller one, where it's played for comedy. And I think Damian's great when played for comedy, because he is a 10-year-old kid with assassin training.
Right. And also, it's the entire thing. I like that when they allow Bruce to sort of step back and be part of the family. You know, even the end played for comedy when Alfred returns to his old stomping grounds and he goes to act. Bruce lets him go do a play with his old friends, and it turns to a disaster. And Bruce and Damian just kind of laugh about it. I like that every once in a while you get to sort of step back and realize these are people. And it was very much of a throwback to the old sort of Bronze Age style of stories.
How often is Alfred just like, you know, so just one dimensional, just literally, like, he's just a guy standing there with, you know, the platter upraised or whatever, or he's doing the stitches on Bruce, and now you get to see him angry, and like he's frustrated with his fellow actors in the Shakespearean play that he's in. Yeah. And it's great to see him well rounded, because so often he's not.
Yeah, this is just a great character story. I mean, it was fun. It was a lot of action, but I enjoyed Bruce on his little trip around the world and trying to get a little bit emotional, and it was great. It was really just, I didn't expect this at all. It might have been my pick of the week. I didn't actually select one, but
I'm right there with you. But it's also a great counterpoint to what Snyder's doing on Batman, because it's so dark.
Yeah.
To have this as something that's more refreshing and fun.
Now, did you guys? How did you feel about Damian in Batman Incorporated then in the same week? Because this was pretty much a Damian centric story there too.
What's funny is it's a different kind of Damian, which is okay. Yeah. It's in the same way that the Batman in this book is different than the Batman in other books. I mean, they're just sort of different interpretations. It's definitely more of a severe Morrison-esque interpretation. I also enjoyed the interplay between Damian and Alfred in this one too, though.
Yes.
See, this is the Damian that I think of, because obviously most of the Damian that I've read is by Morrison, and I think he's been fairly consistent in his presentation of the character. Like, he knows who it is better than anybody else. And I like that this version of Damian, the thing I enjoyed about this issue is that you can play him as a joke for a little while, but he's also very capable. And it's one of those things, like, under the bluster and under the attitude, whatever, like, he's not a shithead, you know, like, he comes off as one, but like the deal is, you know, he's Bruce Wayne's son, I guess, you know, more than anything. And furthermore, like, you know, and also, you know, he's Ra's al Ghul's grandson, and those are the good aspects of that character are the ones that are going to come through. You know, he's going to be a little snotty on top of it. But at the same time, like I remember asking Paul right after finish, I was like, how many issues of this are there left? Like, there's this Leviathan story has been going on for, feels like, a very long time.
It has been going.
I think it's lost a bit of its momentum, or at least maybe me reading it, I've lost a bit of the momentum of it. I know a lot of the people on the site really, really dig this. I think it's a little too global for me, for what I like out of a Batman story. I like him in Gotham. I appreciate the swashbuckling Batman, but I think it's just it's gotten, I don't know, too big for his bat britches.
It was always too big, I think, and at a certain point, I just became okay with losing track of it. Like, I don't know what most of these characters are about anymore, and I kind of just go with it, and I get who the main people are involved, who I'm supposed to care about.
And it's time to end it. I mean, I don't want to see Morrison leave the run, which he's doing, but the Leviathan story in particular has gone on further than these seven issues have been.
Oh yeah.
You know, so at this point, you're like, okay, well, somebody win. I don't even care if it's Polly anymore, but it's time for someone to end the fight. So it's.
Should we talk about the big spoiler of this issue, that we lost a fan favorite member of the Bat family in the night of Knight and Squire?
True.
Yeah,
that's pretty brutally too.
Yeah, I like Knight and Squire a lot. I don't know if there's a lot of room for more of them. In the new 52.
Oh, they will never be seen again once this story.
They'll never ever be seen again. But they had their day in the sun, but I felt kind of sad about Squire.
The injustices against Paul Cornell continue.
Yeah, really.
He didn't create them. No, he was given to tell the story.
He championed them, though.
He did a good little, I guess it ended up being a miniseries, basically.
It was good. We enjoyed it. Now, I picked up, Josh, recently the Activity Volume 1 trade, which I'm looking forward to reading.
Okay, you haven't read it yet?
No, I haven't. I'm not worried about spoilers.
I was going to say, the good news is there really aren't any. It's very.
This has killer butterflies, right?
Yeah.
I did Best of the Weekend covers, and it looked like there were butterflies that were taking down a dude with an assault rifle.
Thematically, that is what was happening.
Okay. It's a metaphor.
This book is it's very cold military operational stories. They've done some character work on some of them, but I honestly couldn't tell you the difference between most of them. I know the one guy who's like the leader. He's the black guy, and then there are a couple of girls. Because it's focused on this, you know, this A-team like group of soldiers who get shit done. What was really cool about this issue was that you had a threat that comes in against the city of Minneapolis, and they have 6 hours. To solve it. And so the issue is rapid fire going through the steps used to solve that problem, to locate the weapon of mass destruction, neutralize it, and find the people responsible. And that's sort of what happens. Rapid fire seems like a really cliche way to go, but that's literally how it proceeds, like through the panels. You're just sort of jumping times, and there's like a little countdown clock. It tells you what time, you know, T minus 3 hours to go, T minus 1 hour, 1 hour, 42 minutes, and you watch how this is solved. The cool thing about the cover is, A, it's a really nice looking cover, but B, those butterflies are actually a real story point, in that the butterflies had been trained to hone in on bomb material. So like they can smell the very, very, very minute traces of, you know, whatever elements make up the explosive, and they sort of let them loose, and then they follow them from above, these, you know, bright pink butterflies across the city, and they hone in on all these guys who are positioned around a stadium, and that's how they know who the killers are, and then, you know, they give the go, and they sniperize them.
And it's like a popular mechanics, like Wired article.
I don't know if that's a real thing, but I was like, I could buy that. That seems to work.
A lot of it is, right? A lot of it is like near future tech.
Yeah, it feels like it. It feels like a lot of DARPA research, sort of just checking in what they're working on now and incorporating that. At the same time, there's a backstory about a leak in the Senate, and a bunch of people get arrested. So this will be another sort of window into getting to know some of those characters. But in terms of just a tactical sort of operational adventure story, and they're usually only one issue each. They're always pretty sharp and pretty on. And I think that both of the, I feel like this is a tough book to make, and I think they're really good at it, and they do a better job every time. But this was a standout issue. It's good series.
I'm not afraid to admit when I'm wrong, and I was wrong when I was first skeptical of the idea of Hawkeye number 7, which was the tribute to, I guess not tribute, but the story about Superstorm Sandy, the issue they were going to donate money. Donating money is great, but I just didn't know. The idea of mixing in real-world stories with superheroes is always a dicey one. So when I first announced it, I kind of rolled my eyes, but I was wrong. Hawkeye number 7 I thought was really fantastic. Let's again.
Give it up for Steve Lieber.
Steve Lieber was great filling in.
That's beautiful.
And I think this was maybe the only book where you could have told this story, because this is a book where the people are very real, character-wise, and it's not a book that you know lives in the upper stratosphere of superheroing. It's very much on the ground, and in that sense, I thought it was a very moving tale. I even got caught up in it when the storm hits. Being from New York and my family being there, and you know, being in the storm, I got very sort of emotional about it. And I thought this was just another wonderful issue from Fraction and his team of artists.
Yeah, I love that it's not sanctimonious. It's not, you know,
it's not preachy about anything.
It's not preachy at all. It's not, you know, Superman looking up at the picture of the firefighters, and which is it's a nice image, but like it can get a little bit too sappy, too sentimental. I don't know, but this is, you talk about, you know, we talk about street level books, cosmic or street level. This is like, you know, it's sub street level. It's about the people, and I love that opening story. And it's just about like your neighbors, you know. And
Hawkeye's trying to survive like anybody else. It's not like he can fly away from the storm. He gets caught up in it too.
I really enjoyed his
car being floated away.
I didn't enjoy it at all. I was like, no.
No, I know, but just that, like, it just like, oh, come on, another thing.
I'm good at boats. I love that this book is kind of, it's about language. It's about how people communicate it, and like how you know, the whole Hawkeye thing is like it's a misunderstanding or a miscommunication. And this book is like, you know, it's great because it doesn't feel like a Marvel superhero book. It feels more like an American Splendor sometimes, or like a Jacques Tardy comic, especially that second half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also I mentioned, you know, Steve Lieber did sort of the first half of the story, and then second half is by Jesse Hamm. I believe that they are both part of Periscope Studios in Portland. I believe.
And and that one's about the female Hawkeye, about Kate Bishop. And she goes to Jersey.
Kate Hudson. So, right. Sorry.
And I like that it's about two of them spending the storm in two different places, and then they meet up at the end, and it's, you know, a little bit, it's about family. It's about, you know, friendships and community. And, it was, you know, it was the perfect kind of book, for this subject. And, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Really well done.
And once again, you can just pick it up. Hawkeye is very eminently jump-onable. I'm not talking about his sexiness.
Well, let's not.
Which is also true. It works on many levels as that descriptor. You can jump on Hawkeye whenever you want.
Okay, I'm gonna. Paul pointed this out to me, and I'm gonna explain a story to Connor.
Okay.
If you didn't read Injustice: Gods Among Us, this will spoil.
From the creators of Mortal Kombat, this is the tie-in comic to the upcoming fighting game, the beat 'em up game.
This is the actual object that says maybe the writing in video games isn't quite up to the level that a lot of you people say it is.
You're the one who plays them. I don't even know.
I play a game a year, maybe.
I love video games. I play more video games than I think anybody on the site. But I don't know. I don't know that I want to.
Okay.
This is just a story.
Yeah, it is. Superman wakes up. He hears a heartbeat. He hears two heartbeats coming from Lois, who is pretty sexy at this point. My God, we're having a baby. And she acts, and she doesn't act like this is news to her, by the way. She just starts being sassy with him, which I thought was strange. And then the Joker then kidnaps Lois Lane, driving Superman into a fit of rage. He finds them the Joker and Harley Quinn in a submarine that they stole. But what the Joker did was put his fear toxin, put the Scarecrow's fear toxin, and he mixed it with
kryptonite,
so that it would work on Superman, who then thinks that Lois Lane is
Doomsday.
Doomsday flies Lois Lane's pregnant body up into space, where she suffocates and dies.
Wow.
So we're seeing it as if he's having this big knockdown, drag out fight with Doomsday. They go up into the atmosphere, and then Batman figures out they're down on the ground. He figures out what the Joker's done, and you go up in outer space, and Superman is throttling his dead wife with
his dead pregnant wife.
Oh, the, wow. The other part,
Josh,
is that
Josh forgot a part.
Joker has rigged it so that if Lois's heart stops, then a nuclear weapon goes off in Metropolis. So we see that the weapon goes off, which of course means that, that Lois is dead, and that's the moment that Superman realizes, because Batman tells him, "Hey, it's Lois." I was like,
"There's
is,
one more part you forgot."
Did I? What is it?
In the kidnapping of Lois Lane, Lois was with Jimmy Olsen investigating this warehouse.
I've got Jimmy on my
Jimmy's
shoe.
Dead.
Yeah, they killed
him. They shot Jimmy in the head. He didn't get to his watch on time. Superman was distracted somewhere else.
He was busy.
Jimmy Olsen is dead. Lois Lane is dead. The baby's dead.
Well, now Perry's dead too because Metropolis has been nuked. Yeah. Don't forget about Bibbo.
Bibbo is dead.
Bibbo's dead.
The whole staff of the Daily Planet.
Guardian is probably
dead. Lex Luthor's probably dead. Morgan Edge.
No, Lex Luthor can't be dead because he's in the game. And he's in his suit, his mech suit.
Ron Troop.
And when I started this, I was like, this writing is not that bad for what this is.
Almost.
It's just the choices. Well, it was thoughtful, at least, you know?
Okay.
Like, it just... and then, it went to a place, though, and it's like poking the bear of the comic. Like, let's make as many people angry. It's like your nerd rage baiting thing.
You think you would have heard about Superman killing pregnant Lois somewhere this week?
Yeah, it's a game.
I heard some people talking about it on Twitter, actually. There's the thought that they could get away with it here because no one cares about this prediction.
I know.
It's Dan's id come to life.
Why do they need to?
So is the next issue going to be Superman flying himself into the sun?
Well,
because that's really the only way would go.
It starts with a flash forward where Batman is investigating, or he's going around the rooftops. Superman has, it's the fascist Superman where he's kind of taken over the world and he has like sentries marching down the street. And then it's 5 years earlier or something like that. So this all leads to Superman becoming a crazy dictator, as stories are wont to do.
Well, contemplate that. Meanwhile, Chris Hardwick, everybody knows him. He's from the Nerdist podcast. He's from The Talking Dead. He's got the upcoming show Nerdist TV on the BBC America. But he also does stand-up comedy. It's where he began. And his first Comedy Central special, Mandroid, was released on CD and DVD. It was released a couple weeks ago. You can go check it out. It's available on Amazon and iTunes, and the DVD is an extended, uncensored version with 20 minutes of bonus material that wasn't broadcast on TV, and it's got lots of cool Easter eggs on it. Like I said, it's on Amazon and iTunes. We had a contest running on ifanboy.com for the iFan base to enter to win a DVD, to win a print of the cover, which is an awesome sort of throwback 50s style mandroid fighting an alien. You win that cover, and you win some goodie bag of DVDs and CDs. And the winner of that, who went to iFanboy and wrote in the comments about who the mandroid should fight, was Ragu73 Ryan Williams. Ryan wrote about mandroid fighting Dr. Frederick Wortham. So if you want to read Ragu73's little scenario for that, go to fmboy.com, search Mandroid. You'll find that. You see, there's a bunch of really entertaining entries, but we like that one the best. So Ragu73, Ryan Williams, you will be hearing from us soon to set up you receiving your prize pack from Comedy Central and Mandroid, Chris Hardwick's Mandroid. So congratulations to Ryan.
Smart nice choice, work. Well argued.
Yes.
Yeah. the 100th issue of Invincible came out. A lot of people thought this was going to be the pick of the week. After I read it, it was not going to be the pick of the week.
Interesting.
It wasn't bad. It was just fine. This book has actually had... The problem with Invincible lately has been a lot of talking. Like, a lot of talking about things and pontificating. And should I be doing this? Do I have the power? Which is kind of interesting. But it sort of belies, I think, the main strength that Ryan Ottley has, which is drawing...
huge action.
Things getting punched a lot, and spaceships, and cities being destroyed. He's very good at that. So while it's nice to give him a break every once in a while, this was a classic superhero. Like, this is the thing where somebody's going to die. And then, so the first page is Dinosaurus crushing Mark's head. But it turns out that it's the
Star Trek 2 swerve. It's the we're gonna kill Spock. Ha ha ha! We did it in the first 5 minutes. He's not really dead. Oh no, he's dead.
No, he wasn't dead. He switched a clone body out that Dinosaurus had made in an interdimensional pocket. And then there was one really interesting thing that happened here is that Dinosaurus sort of came to his senses and Mark had to take care of that problem. And I thought it was handled in a storytelling sense really nice. It was one really good page that was had a lot of blood in it. But it was fine. It was pretty good. It was all right. I don't want to say that it's getting a little long in the tooth, but the current epoch of this book is like it's gotta do what it's gonna do because I feel like it's been building up to this 100th issue for a while, so now it's gotta figure out the next thing it's gonna be because I don't think it can keep being the same thing with all the sort of changes that they've made. That's all. I'm done.
It was a very shiny book. I saw it on the shelves.
One of the versions.
Some versions. Some iterations of this book. Yeah.
That was a $10 version. I bought the $4 version. It was less shiny.
Wise. Yeah. Nowhere Men number 3. All versions of this are metaphorically shiny because it's a great book. Eric Stevenson, Nate Bellegarde, Jordi Belair. Phonographics, beautifully designed book. It's another great science fiction comic from Image. They seem to have the whole market on mad science, and that's great. So this is, if you love Manhattan Projects, if you love Prophet, just weird science stuff, this is a book for you. And it's about, it's hard to describe. It's sort of like it's about the Fab Four of science. There's some elements in the past that are about this Beatles-like group of scientists with weird hair, and they all form a group, World Corps, and they're gonna, you know, save the world through science, and some of them have better intentions than others. Fast forward to the modern day, and there is there's a remote experimentation area, and we find out at the end of the first issue that it's in outer space. It's a satellite, and there's a plague running through this satellite with all of these young scientists on there. Bad place to get sick, outer space. And how are they going to get out of this? They build a portal. They go through the portal. And each of them, in little small groups of two or three, end up in different places around the world. The satellite explodes, crash lands on the Earth. There's a group that's out in this issue looking for, like, what is that thing that came out of the sky? And they find the pieces of the satellite in the desert. It's like a space station, excuse me, not really a satellite. And one of the civilians on Earth who finds the parts of this space shuttle is starting to cough and sneeze some blood. So it's like he's got the plague. The people who were up there in outer space, who are now in different parts of the planet, are going through weird mutations and they have strange powers. It's a weird, trippy book. It's really fantastic. There's kind of this great European looking art to it. We've said European a couple times on the show. Mm-hmm. I don't know how exactly to describe the European look. I think it's just one of those things we know it when we see it.
It's a bit more sleek.
I find it a little more expressive than we tend to do here. And it's almost sometimes a little more line based, like the black lines define it.
There's really like clean backgrounds. They have a lot of just sort of matte backgrounds, not a huge amount of detail there, but great detail in the foreground. So you're thinking like Frank Quitely kind of stuff. But yeah, so it's really beautiful. It's you know European art when you see it, and like pornography, and you derive great pleasure from it in some cases. So that's Nowhere Men.
Pornography again?
I don't know what we're talking about anymore.
Who's reading Dark Avengers?
I am.
Okay.
I am. I remembered to get Dark Avengers. That took me a while to build that habit back up because I was still scarred from the Osborne years. And it turns out that Jeff Parker is still writing this book. And the thing that's great about Dark Avengers is this is the book that nobody cares about or is paying attention to. So there is a certain form of unfiltered Jeff Parker going, well, you know what would be fun? Because it takes place in a Marvel universe of a different dimension. And you've got sort of these characters that nobody really cares about, and then versions of the characters that aren't real. So he can kind of do whatever he wants, and it's a bit silly, but it's also like it's on a really huge scale. In this one, this is one of the Earths where all of the superhero families have sort of gone against each other. So in this one, Ben Grimm is actually in charge of the monsters, like all of the, you know, the monsters that the Mole Man used to have and all of them. And he's part of the Yancey Street contingent. And he goes up against Reed Richards, who's gotten too big for his britches. And all of the Dark Avengers characters are sort of trapped here. And they're caught in between this. And the evil Doctor Strange who lives there is controlling some of them.
Is this a new story, or has this been happening since the first issue?
It's been happening since the first one, but what happened was there were two stories going on for a while, and the other story wrapped up an issue or two ago, and it was the characters who we'd known from the end of Thunderbolts, the guys from Thunderbolts, right. Then, but the Captain John Walker is in this story, and he just got his body restored, so he's the U.S. agent again, one of my favorite costumes of the 80s. And he's sort of back to fighting.
Why do you think they didn't renumber this book?
I don't know why the book exists. I'm shocked that it's still being printed.
I mean, I know why it exists, but it just seems bizarre that this book particularly didn't get renumbered.
I don't know.
It seems weird. It seems like this would be the perfect place for a lower tier book to get restarted. I probably would have checked it out, but yeah.
It's wacky, and it really is. I mean, like, Jeff Parker actually has a really good handle on the sort of fundamentals of the Marvel Universe and these characters, and it's they're just letting him do whatever. And he puts in stupid things like do you remember, like, a long time ago there was the when Thor goes to the women's prison and they're all making like sex jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Like in this one, not Clint Barton, but his brother Barney. Is it Barney? Barney Barton.
Barney Barton.
I'm saying it out loud now, and it feels like that's right, but I'm not sure. He like has a dream, and it's just all chicks wanting to have sex with him, and it's just goofy, and it's like, why, he really, it's like just no one cares, so he can just do whatever he wants, and that makes it really fun.
Well, I was reading Batman Beyond Unlimited number 12, which is the Timverse book that they put together the digital releases into, and the first story was a Lobo story, and I could always use less Lobo in my life, so I wasn't thrilled about that. The third story was continuation of Adam Beach and Norm Brayfogle's great Batman Beyond story with Batman fighting the Joker's gang. But the middle story was an origin of Micron. They've been slipping in these origin stories of these various characters that you may not know about. And the first couple of pages, I was like, who is this drawing this? And then I realized it was Fiona Staples. And it was awesome.
I saw that panel you put up. That was pretty good looking.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
She did a short. I mean, it's short. It was like probably not even a 10-pager, but it was a little origin of Micron. I don't really know about Micron, but now I do, and it would look great. And I could totally, you know, whenever Fiona Staples wants to leave Saga and do other stuff, that's fine.
No, it's not.
No, it isn't.
Whoa,
no,
buddy.
He's not speaking for us.
Speaking for myself.
You're that's fine it. With her leaving that?
No, I'm saying if she wants to and do other things.
No, you know what? I don't
may
think
I suggest a Batman book. Perhaps.
You know what? I mean, theoretically, she has choice. She should
she's
be
allowed
to
leave
do,
if she
but
wants.
I don't. I'm not happy. I wouldn't be happy about that.
If she announced it was a Batman book starring middle-aged grizzled Batman and old man Alfred, I'd be less sad about her leaving Saga. Is what I'm saying.
I still
you understand
get,
what I'm saying.
No, I can't get behind that. I'm sorry.
Those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. You can go to ifanboy.com. You can make your pull list every Monday, or you can actually do it every day. You can do it, but Mondays when the new books come out, you can write and review your books. You can write user reviews. You can also make your pick of the week, and we like to run down the top five picks of the week as chosen by the audience. And this is, as always, at time of recording, though it may not change too much, but it might. Number five was Aquaman number 16 with 5.9%. That was the latest issue of the Justice League Aquaman crossover. Four was Batman and Robin Annual number 1 with 8.2%. Three was Batman Incorporated number 7, 14.4%. Two was Invincible number 100 at 18.9%. The number one pick as chosen by the audience was Hawkeye number 7 with 27.8%.
It's a nice spread.
I think Punisher was in there in the top 10, I believe.
Yeah. The fifth book is over 5%. That's pretty good. That's a nice diverse week. First user review we want to talk about is Captain Jack Harkness 4. There are at least three others. On Superior Spider-Man number 2, as we get used to more life with Dr. Octopus as Spider-Man, gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Pick the week percentage was 3.8% or thereabouts by the time you listen to this. I was never against the idea of Doc Ock being Superior Spider-Man. I thought it was a nice twist, but at the end of issue 1, I was a little disappointed that they weren't going to let him be on his own for a while. I thought they brought back Peter way too early, and I enjoyed the role he played in the issue. I just hope it doesn't get old within a couple of issues. Also, I couldn't help but chuckle at Ock's inner monologue when it came to Mary Jane. There's just something funny about him looking at her as a scientific experiment that he has to qualify their dates as the Watson dating trials. I'm excited to see what Slott has in store for Ock and Peter, the friendly ghost.
They can't win, is basically.
No.
Brought back too soon, too long.
No, but I think that highlights a strength of the book.
I think I admire them for walking such a fine line because 50% of readers would say that's really creepy. 50% say that's kind of funny.
Is anybody reading this?
Yeah, it's very odd. I can't pin it down, and I mean that in a good way. I'm not a huge fan of Dan Slott's work, and you can definitely see him in here, but he's certainly pushing it, and he's doing a very different thing. And to me, this feels like almost like a subversive comic from the 70s, you know, like guys who are trying to be like, what can we get away with here? What can we do that's different? And it's very strange. Like, it's, if you think about like just the overall idea, and he's right, we're in Doc Ock's head all the time, and it's weird. The only complaint that I had about this book actually is that, and I read it digitally, I had a hard time actually reading Peter's dialogue because it's done this like white on light blue, and it didn't read very well. However, I ended up actually kind of skipping a lot of it, but I kind of got the point because he was like, hey, wait, no, don't do that. Don't, like, that's basically a Peter. There was too much of that. Like, if I was to make any changes to this, I would just say to tone it down about a half a step. Although by not toning it down, it makes it feel kind of classic. You know, it's the same thing. Like, can't win. So do, you know, like, they're doing something, and it's not, you know, it's interesting. And it's causing a reaction. But it's not just bad. You know what I mean? Like, it's much more interesting than that.
Okay. They're doing something. Josh Flanagan, iFanboy.com.
I would, yes. They're doing
right on the hardcover.
They're doing something.
The inside of the dust jacket. Yeah. Let me take this next one. Sam Labat, unwritten, number 45, story, 4 out of 5, art, 3 out of 5. Pick a week percentage, 3.8% or thereabouts. So then Peter Gross looked at my carry and said, why not zombies? This is the comic I used to cite when my fellow English majors attempted to dismiss comics as silly. So it was a little hard for me to accept that these fellows who had once staged a lengthy discussion between Mark Twain and Rudyard Kipling, I remember that, were moving on to subjects like full frontal nudity, casual sex, vampires, zombies, and procedural detective work. Once I got through the silliness and my disappointment that the Tom Taylor meets Bunny Lucifer in Hell story was not going to be sewn up for 2 months, I have to say it was a fairly successful issue.
Side note.
Go ahead.
Injustice Gods Among Us issue was written by Tom Taylor.
So, weird.
Yeah, Tom Taylor.
I think it's the same character.
You think it's okay? It was written by a character.
In this review, he actually, there's other parts of it. He actually got it mixed up. Peter Gross is the artist, and Mike Carey is the writer.
Well, how do you know that Peter Gross didn't say, well, not zombies?
Well, in the other part of the thing, he got it.
Back. Oh.
So I'm just.
In many cases, it would be the artist suggesting, can I draw zombies, please?
You know, the thing is that.
All my friends are drawing zombies.
Literally, all of my friends. the thing about this is that it's interesting because he pointed out, he's like, well, I liked it when it was Mark Twain and Rudyard Kipling, but I didn't like it when they went into these other sort of genres. But the whole thing is about storytelling, and there's every genre of every type of book, and so it kind of works like that. It's just that when it focuses on a thing that you're interested in or that you consider more valuable.
Literary. Yeah,
then maybe you can give it a little more credence. But it, you know, originally the book was also based off, you know, basically a Harry Potter conceit, and that's about as, and I don't mean this, it's like as low culture as you can get in from a certain point of view. And right. I don't mean
here's
that.
Here's my thing. I think Mark Twain himself would be into it. That's my thing. I'd be curious what Sam thinks about the upcoming crossover between The Unwritten and the other thing.
Fables.
Fables, right?
The other thing.
You know, it's an obscure book.
I had let Unwritten issues pile up for a while. I had to read like 4 or 5 of them in a row, and this is the first one I've read as it came out in a while. Is this going on forever?
No.
I felt like it was.
No Vertigo book goes on forever. I know.
Theoretically, nothing goes along forever.
I feel like this story is getting. I know we've said this a few times, but I feel like the story needs to get to its thing for a while. I don't really like the phase it's in all that much.
Well, a crossover should help.
Yeah, that's what they're thinking.
Shot in the arm.
So those are the user reviews. You can go to fanboy.com/comics, and you can rate and review your books. So you can write a user review, and if it's good, we'll get it on the show. So to check it out. Josh, your turn.
Hey, guys. You like the Amazon.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you hate local businesses. No. if one of the ways that you can help out iFanboy.com is to, if you make your Amazon purchases, which at this point could pretty much be anything, mm-hmm. if you go to iFanboy.com/Amazon and you go through to Amazon.com/there, we get a little piece of the action, and that is one of the – actually a very specific thing that helps cover operating costs around here, and trust me, we need it. So if you want to just do your shopping through there and make sure to go through iFanboy, that would help us out a lot. And basically, you're just doing what you're already doing. And Connor can't do all of it by himself. And we know he tries.
Right.
You know
they're offering vacations now through Amazon? Like I bought something the other day, and like it's, you know, they have that page where it says, you might also like, and it was like, do you want to go to a Mexican resort and include airfare? And I was like, yes, I do.
if Amazon was a Vegas casino, Connor would be a whale.
So if you're slash Amazon.
If you're
on the fence, buy something through the portal. I live like Eeyore. I have to rebuild my dwelling place every night. So help us out.
Let's do a couple of emails. The first email comes from James. He writes, after many, many hours of deep thought, I came up to the thought that cover art seems to be on the decline. What used to be a thought out tableau of themes and concepts in the book have become more and more just a glorified panel. And in the worst case scenario, an ad. I tend to love a saga or a Who's Jake Ellis for their cohesive cover art. Thoughts?
This is a passive-aggressive dig at my choices for best covers of the week. I know what he's doing here.
This was actually
he's saying directly, I make bad choices.
This is actually written directly to Ron. But I thought, there's no reason he has to answer that, and we need emails. But I understand where he's coming from in a certain way, but it's one of those things where I've said for a long time that I think that comic art is actually it's better than it's ever been, and I think that cover art is right up there. But I think that the function of cover art has changed a little bit. I'm not one of those people. I don't think that like that all the covers are ambiguous and don't have anything to do with it. I think sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But you know, like I think the depth and breadth of sort of the amounts of different styles we get with comic book cover art is sort of greater than it's ever been. You know, it's the stuff that they really put thought into. And, you know, covers do different things now than they used to. Not even to talk about the variant cover art platform on which the industry sits.
It used to be very specific to the book, and now there's a lot more general art, which people don't like, but it's, you know, they must do it for a reason. I don't know. I tend to not even look at them much anymore.
I really don't notice them that much. That's one of the things that comes up. Unless it's really good, and then I do notice it.
Well, I'm glad you guys like the feature that I put so much work into.
No, actually, that's how I notice. Like, I will be like, what did you pick out? And then I will go in and see them that way. But until you do that, I kind of don't see them unless it's a thing that really catches my eye. And what I have found is the thing that I like isn't necessary. My favorite cover of last year was so the Shade Darwin Cook variant cover. Like there was just when it was all industrial design.
Yeah, okay.
Paul, you do the weekly cover feature and I fan by the best cover. So what do you you must have more thoughts on this.
There are weeks where it is rough and I was like, man, there is nothing, and I kind of have to make an excuse for, well, that element is interesting. And but I think what Josh said is true, is that there's so much diversity. The field is so broad. There's so many different people doing so many different things that if you really look, you will find something that you like each week, each month, whatever. DC's comics right now universally god awful. It's very difficult. Part of it has to do with those damned Arrow ads at the top of every single one, and there's just a lot of logos getting in the way, and you know, barcodes and stuff. But there are so many comic publishers that I you can't dismiss what they're doing. I think there's so many good covers out there, and you'll find them if you really look for them. I have the benefit of poring over them each week, so I do see a lot of them. They might not jump out at you from the shelves, but if you really look, you'll find them.
All right.
Shouldn't be that hard, but
brief discussion
yeah.
question. Do you think that the artist on the interior should be the same guy who does the cover?
No.
I think ideally, yes.
Ideally? See, I used to think that, but now I feel like they're almost the interior art is a different
game. Skill.
And sometimes it makes the artist look worse because
yeah, I think that's been the biggest problem with it. I think the ideal, in a perfect world, the cover artist and the interior artist are always the same for that very reason.
Yeah, but But
I think the cover should be on the back of the book, or should be in the middle, or it should be clear.
Yeah. All right.
It should be clear covers on everything. You just see the insides.
That's fine. That way no one has to worry about it.
It should just be loose pages, no staples, no nothing. You just get a bag, pick your pages, you buy them by the pound. I just get angry for no reason.
We have to move along. I know.
All right. You asked the question.
All right, this is a really quick question because everyone needs to be stereotyped. Hey, iFanboys.
Who wrote it?
I'll get to it. Adrian writes in and says, quick question. Connor is the DC guy. Josh is the indie guy. What kind of guy is Paul?
I'm the despondent DC guy. No, I traditionally identify as a DC guy. That's a little bit trickier these days. I'm going to get a lot of hate for this. But I like a little bit of everything. Right now I'm big into Image Comics. I'd like a lot of stuff going on at Marvel too. I don't know. I like a little bit of everything.
You can only be one thing though.
I can only be one thing.
They need you to be one thing.
My favorite contemporary novel is The Celery Stalks at Midnight by James Howe, featuring Benicula. My second favorite contemporary novel is The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon. My favorite classic novel is the original Benicula by
The Word Guy.
Deborah and James Howe.
You're the Word Guy.
Yeah, I like story. I like to reinvent what guy I am each week.
I'll tell you what. I don't know.
Like, try new things.
I don't think I'm the indie guy, and I don't think I'm the Vertigo guy anymore. I don't know what guy I am.
I don't know if anybody could be the Vertigo guy. If there is a Vertigo guy, he's very sad.
Connor's having a hard time on that DC guy ledge, too.
It's tough. They're making it very tough.
Oh, please.
So there
I like
you go.
Superman a lot.
Paul's a Superman guy.
Superman fan, so I'm very sad often.
If you want to stereotype us or ask us how to stereotype us, or if any other questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We will try our best to answer them here or elsewhere. We might be – let's have time to squeeze one in quickly, one voicemail. We're running a little long. We can get one in. The first voicemail has a question about sound.
Hello, iFanboys, old and new. This is Shark from the message board calling from Norman, Oklahoma. I was thinking recently about characters' signature sound effects. Specifically in the context of a Jeopardy category, where like the $100 question would be, or $100 answer would be snicked, $200 would be bamf, $300 would be thwip, and then I got nothing. Help me out. What's the rest of the category? Love the show. Bye.
First of all, your name is terrifying. That's not cool. Second of all, I was listening to your question and I was going through it as you're talking and I only had those three too.
Yeah.
I don't know any of those.
I was like, say
okay,
thwip.
I got one. All right, let me do it. Let me see if I can even make the noise.
Oh, the Damien noise?
Damien noise, yeah.
Nice, nice. There's a clang with a
clang.
K. That's Captain America's shield.
Oh right, clang.
There is Hellboy, which is crap.
That's not a noise. That's a word.
I know. That was a joke. There is some who said caw. Wasn't that a classic iFanboy? Caw. I forget who
it
was. But there was definitely that.
I think there was Bottle Rocket. I think there was Owen Wilson in Bottle Rocket.
You know the Punishers?
Blam.
Buddha, 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 Buddha.
I think, well, Shark, you named the three. I mean, those are the three big ones. I don't know. The other ones get really obscure.
Oh, I got the tough one, the Daily Double, like the $1,000 one.
What?
Is GD. Good. Which got Grant Morrison in a lot of trouble in the beginning of the New 52. That was Young Superman.
Yeah. So there you go, Shark. Those are the three. You named the top ones. I think Banff is my favorite,
Herm.
But that's Herm.
That's not
Herm.
Sound effect.
That's,
Herm is a,
yeah, it
Herm.
Is.
Herm's not a sound effect. Those are things people say.
Does he write it out?
Yes.
Yeah, but it's in a balloon. It's intra balloon as opposed to extra balloon.
Yeah, it's not a sound effect. So you can call us 888-FANBOYS 3262697 if you have any questions about sound effects. We will not know more than what you say.
Does the repulsor ray have a sound effect? Because I feel like it should.
It should, but it doesn't have a sound effect.
Flash?
So
Sorry.
Flash, maybe. So, Paul, you have sad news for us.
Yeah, you say it.
Sad for you. You want me to say it? Sad for you, maybe. Yeah. So Bat Don't Miss. We're going to wrap that one up. Or actually, it's done. We're gonna replace it with some other podcasts. Like we're going to do some more Talksplodes. We're going to do some more Booksplodes. So more robust podcasts and just less frequently. So we'll try to do like a Talksplode and a Booksplode maybe each month.
Yeah, Don't Miss was the weekly Monday show. We talked about a book with a creator coming out that week, but we decided as we went through everything we do with, you know, sort of new regime, what we wanted to do, and we decided we'd rather do more Talksplodes than Don't Miss shows. And as you may have noticed, they were often missing because they're hard to coordinate, especially when things are going on. So we decided instead to replace those with Talksplodes, so, or other shows. So you'll be seeing more special edition shows like that in the wake of the
we have more breathing room in a Talksplode. We can talk longer. We don't have to hurry up and do it in 15 minutes.
The end of Don't Miss.
Ron would yell at me.
The thing is that Paul came through the place. He had a clipboard and he had a red Sharpie.
And this is going.
He just point this and this. And there was a guy, he had an assistant, which is weird because I did not remember budgeting for that. And the
gone.
He had a bow tie on. He looked just like Paul, but he was a foot shorter. And he just went, okay. Okay. And then
Yeah.
It's my nephew Steven, okay?
I'm
already going through, I'm deleting all of Ron's old articles. They will be gone soon. Don't worry about it.
But still with us, Josh is?
We have the Make Comics podcast from me and Andy Schmidt. I really want to pronounce that D. From the Comics Experience group. His sort of instructional comic business. Him and I are going to talk about an aspect of making comics some way. There's a lot of facets of it, and there's been some really interesting shows lately. I think the last batch of them really came up with some conversations that we hadn't had before. So there'll be more of those coming up.
And if you look behind this show on the feed and behind the Make Comics show, you'll find the Dark Knight Returns Part 2 special edition show that me and Paul and Chris Niesman talked about the new movie, the new animated film. We didn't have Dr. Ryan Hopped with us, so we didn't have the full brain trust with us. In fact, we only had the trust.
Is he doctor now? Did that happen?
I like to call him that just because he's a scientist.
I'm going to start doing that too.
So if you want to hear us talk about the second part of the animated Dark Knight Returns, you can find that in the feed. It was a very interesting discussion. We talked about the movie. We talked about the book in general and the cultural things around it. It was a very interesting discussion. I quite enjoyed it. So you can look at that in the feed.
And next week, look out for a conversation between myself and Charles Soule, who is the guy who's taken over Swamp Thing from Scott Snyder. So a lot of writers have gone on to big careers after taking over Swamp Thing and not doing great at it. But we talk about that a little bit. And he's also got a couple of creator-owned projects. He did a book called 27. Great conversation about sort of what it means to come up through DC at this point in history and what that's like. And we do talk about that. So you should definitely look for that later this week.
All of that is found at iFanboy.com, including the great work we do every day, as if I may say so myself, on talking about the news and all the fun stuff going on in comics. And you can find Josh's Pick of the Week review there. You can find Paul's inaugural Book of the Month review there this Monday on the site.
Nudge.
He said it. Now you got to do it.
First Monday of the month. You can find the first Book of the Month review from Paul Montgomery. So you'll find that at fanboy.com, as well as the About page. We find our new staff listings. We added a couple of new people in there. You can go to fanboy.com/about. You can also find our social network links there. Become our friend online. You can follow the action on twitter.com/ifanboy and at facebook.com/ifanboy.
And you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS 326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, recipes, all that stuff.
Yes, definitely recipes. If you like us, you can write a review in iTunes or you tell other people about it. Link the shows that you like in Facebook or on Twitter or just pass the word around the best way that you can, digitally, manually, or otherwise. And we really
message in a bottle.
That. It's shown to be very ineffective for the amount of effort that it takes to do that. But if you know, it's better than nothing.
It'll probably end up in Japan.
Yeah, it'll end up in that swirling plastic mass.
Ugh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I do. I read an article on that.
Isn't there a comic
depressing.
About it? Isn't
the Great
that the,
Pacific.
There you
yeah.
go, Great Pacific. See, we know comics. that's a good way to help.
We're aware of our footprint.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so that was our show this week. Paul, congratulations on your first show as the new regular co-host of iFanboy's Pick League podcast. You did a great
Thank
job.
Thank you. I resign.
You're not
smart.
Yeah,
smart. You've been paying attention to me in class.
Not a bad idea. So, and until next week, we will be back. My name is Connor.
I am the BJ Honeycutt to Ron's Trapper John McIntyre. Paul McComb.
You got an endless bag of those, don't you?
Watch a lot of TV. We'll be right back.
more than one person, so everyone jump on. I'll miss you when you're just like them.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.